Warning, the Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
MBA, but I could have taken Merrill Lynch and run it down so that Bank of America could have bought it. I would have done that job if I knew I was going to get $90 million at the end of it. I mean, that's just the fact of what happens. Lehman Brothers and all of these poor people that we're so worried about gave themselves hundreds of millions of dollars in bonuses last year as they knew their very company was crashing.
America this week faces an historic crisis in our financial system. We must pass legislation to address this crisis. If we do not, credit will dry up with devastating consequences for our economy. People will no longer be able to buy homes, and their life savings will be at stake. Businesses will not have enough money to pay their employees. If we do not act, every corner of our country will be impacted.
Yes, it's me and I'm in love. Had no love and say you know when. You know I love you. Yes, I do.
Yeah, you know what I'd like to say if this was a nightclub. That's why I'm playing Yes, It's Me and I'm in Love Again. Because the very same people who loved us so unkindly are now looking to love us again. And I'm using a non-flowery word. The very same Wall Street people who loved us just so well are now looking to love us all over again. This is the Savage Nation. The phone number is 1-800-449-8255. MichaelSavage.com. Of course, I was the first in the media, the major media, to reject the bailout plan. As you well know, the golfer and the other lackeys of the Republicans are in favor of it. But if you understand economics as I do, the first rule of economics should be the same as the first rule of medicine, at least medicine as it used to be practiced before the thieves got into the medical profession. The rule was doctor, do no harm. First, do no harm. In other words, doctors were cautioned, and they swore allegiance to the Hippocratic Oath for thousands of years until approximately 25 years ago when the Hippocratic Oath was removed from the medical school curriculum. Because if a doctor would first do no harm, he would have to be in medicine for something other than profit. And if a doctor was in medicine for something other than profit, why, then the entire profit-driven medical profession would collapse. And I say let it collapse. I'd rather have healers rather than businessmen with medical degrees who perform unnecessary procedures, prescribe unnecessary drugs, and otherwise make the patient sicker than they were before. Now, it's the same with the bailout plan. I would say doctor first, do no harm. Now, we keep hearing from the creeps who brought about this disaster that unless we act immediately with a gun to our head, the whole world will come to an end. And credit will dry up. And I'm sad to tell you that McCain is 1,000% wrong by buying that line. He's a schmuck. And I know you don't want to hear it because you say, well, you're just pushing Obama. He's no better. McCain is a putz. He's an old schmendrick for saying a thing like that. McCain is feeding us the very same line that Bush has been feeding us. Give them what they want or the whole world comes to an end. I say, John, you're an idiot. The opposite is true. The absolute opposite is true. And I'm going to prove it to you today. But before I prove to you that doing nothing would be better for this economy than letting these gangsters have an open checkbook to our tax base, I say put them in jail. I say send in the federal marshals and shackle Paulson and Bernanke and put him into the tombs along with Ahmanejad. Why Ahmanejad was allowed to speak to the UN without being arrested, I'll never understand. Unless the ties between Iran and the leaders of this country are so tight that we don't even see it. But that's a separate story, which I'll get to later. Doctor first, do no harm. Now, I have a special offer. I'm going to give away a free book immediately to anyone who's listening to this show You're going to get a free copy of Psychological Nudity, which cannot be bought in bookstores. It can only be purchased on michaelsavage.com. I'm going to offer you this book right now if you can answer this question. Yesterday, I used math to show you that by putting up $5 billion of their own real estate holdings, that would be Paulson, Bernanke, Cox, Morgan Stanley, and Goldman Sachs, including their office buildings. The total of all of their real estate holdings would be only $5 billion. I'm pretty sure of that. That's a pretty big number, but it wouldn't be more than $5 billion. And I gave a percentage yesterday that was wrong, but I figured out right after the show I was wrong. Does anyone know what I said yesterday? No one was listening. 1-800-449-8255, because you missed the opportunity to buy a book. Now, in honor of Secretary Paulson, Bernanke, Chris Cox, Morgan Stanley, Goldman Sachs, I'm going to read Love by the Sewer Plant today on The Savage Nation, in that this seems to me like Love by the Sewer Plant is what they're giving us. Their bailout plan is not only outrageous, it's criminal. So since we, do we have any takers on that, Beowulf, of what the mistake I made? No. All right, they didn't hear me. That's the good thing about talk radio, is that although you try to be as accurate as you can, even when you make a mistake, they don't hear you. And the reason is that the liberals are too stoned to hear you accurately, so they only report what they want to hear. And the conservatives are too busy making a living to actually listen to every word you say. So, for example, for 3 months now, I've been saying Obama is not too black to be president. He's too green. Great. It's a great line. It could destroy his campaign. But no one knows I said it. It'll be stolen very shortly by somebody who'll make a bumper sticker out of it. But Michael Savage said he's not too black. He's too green. It's not even up on michaelsavage.com to prove it, but I've been saying it for about, a while now. So nobody knows the mistake I made, so I'll make it again. But at this time, it won't be a mistake. Any callers yet, Beowulf, on the mathematics? No, all right, so good. Here's what I said yesterday. They want $1 trillion, roughly. I'm not going to say $700 billion because you know anything the government wants is off by 30 to 150%. Ferris thinks he got it right or wrong? All right. Our Ferris, welcome to the Savage Nation. What's on your mind? Go ahead, please.
Evening, Doc. I say that the answer is 20%, and I would love to get a copy of...
Well, no, it isn't, though, because the amount of real estate I'm asking them to collateralize the $1 trillion with is 0.5% of a trillion.
Oh, I thought the operative number there was $5 billion. And I came up with 20%, but
no, $5 billion of $1 trillion is 0.5%. Is that correct?
I believe you're right.
Yeah. Well, okay. Well, because I worked on it after the show, I said, "Wait a minute, it's not 5%." So thank you. Here's what I said yesterday. So let's clear the air. Let's start again. These gentlemen are telling us to give them a check for $1 trillion with nothing down. I'm saying, wait a minute. If I go to a bank for a loan, I got to put up some collateral to get something, don't I? So if I went to a banker and said, I want $100,000, and he'll say to me, well, okay, what do you have for collateral? And I say X, Y, and Z. So what percent is that? He said, well, I'm sorry, I can't give you the loan unless you give me a 10% down, 20% down, right? What would you get from a bank today? Do you know of a banker who would give you money for nothing down? No, nobody in the world. So they'd say you need to put up 10%, 20%. So what's 10%? Equal to? Well, let's run the numbers together. Now, listen to what I'm talking to you. You don't need a math degree to understand this. Paulson is selling a bill of goods that's fraudulent, in my opinion. Bernanke is a stooge who looks like he should be in a Barbasol ad in the night. He should be on the side of a road holding up a Barbasol sign saying, you need a shave, and so do I. If it was up to me, I'd strip them of their assets and put them on roadsides around America on a rotating roadshow. Paulson, Bernanke, Cox, Morgan Stanley, and Goldman CEOs would be made to go around the country in the back of a wagon, wearing a barrel around their waist, saying, I am a liar and a thief. But then we don't live in China. We live in America, where the biggest gangsters get away with virtually anything they want. That's how it works, in my opinion, now. I realize this language is too harsh for all of you polite folks out there. You don't like harsh language. You like polite. You like media talk, something that's easy listening, something that doesn't grate you. You don't want gruff. You don't want angry. You want something light and easy. Well, I'm giving it to you light and easy. So Love by the Sewer Plant is what they're trying to give you right here. Let us start again. They want $1 trillion. I'm saying let them put up the buildings they're in. Morgan Stanley inherited the Bear Stearns building, which was estimated to be valued at $1 billion in Manhattan. It's prime real estate. They got it for about $100 million. But let's say it's even $1 billion. Now take the houses that Paulson owns, Bernanke owns, Cox owns, the directors of Morgan, the directors of Goldman. Now you add up, let's say, okay, all right, Mr. Goldman, step before here, the committee. This is Michael Savage. How much is your real estate worth in the Hamptons? Don't give me double. Don't go. How much is that house worth that you have in the Hamptons on the ocean? It's 100 feet of the Hamptons. It's worth $63 million. Your townhouse in Manhattan is worth $39 million. Your apartment in Boca Raton is worth $12 million. The house you have in Switzerland is worth $9 million. The Vail real estate you have next to Dianne Feinstein is worth $32 million. You have a Gulfstream 5 worth $65 million and assorted other real estate holdings. Now, you add that up from Paulson's ownership, Bernanke, Cox, Morgan Stanley directors, and Goldman directors. My figure is it's not more than $5 billion. Why shouldn't we force them to collateralize this $1 trillion loan with their own real estate if they're so sure that they know what they're doing? You say, well, how the? Well, because look at the number. They want $1 trillion. I'm saying put up $5 billion of your own real estate. It's 0.5%. Did you hear what I said? It's not 5%. It's not zero. It's not 5% down. So that would be like you going to a bank to borrow 100 grand, and the banker says, sure, I'll give you 100 grand. But you know what? You have to put up $500. Now, do you know anybody listening to this show who wouldn't get $500 to get 100,000? So why should we ask any less of these guys? We're asking them the equivalent of 500 per 100,000, which is $5 billion of real estate holdings. Why didn't you hear that today? Instead, I heard sugar-coated questions from Republicans who yesterday were full of fire and brimstone. Today, they became New Testament beholders. Yesterday, they were from the Old Testament when the cameras were on. They were flaming Old Testament zealots when the cameras were on at C-SPAN. Today, when the cameras moved on to something else, like some slut on Sunset Boulevard who pulled up her dress and said she's a lesbian, suddenly they became like New Testament testimonials, which was shocking. Phone number 1-800-449-8255. The book is Michael Savage. I mean, what am I talking about? What do I remember anymore? It's getting me too confused. All right, so 0.5% down, Mr. Burnett, whatever your name is, Mr. Paulson. If we had a just government, the federal marshals would have been doing the questioning now in a holding cell with a lamp swinging over their head with a rubber truncheon. I'll be right back.
Savage.
So we had show hearings today in Washington. As you well know, Washington specializes in entertainment and acting. And they had a show hearing today with the star being Hank Paulson, our friend Hank. Watch out when someone gives you a nickname because you know you're being fleeced. It's like not Sanford Burger. Remember Sox, Sandy Burger? Whenever they give you a childish nickname, you know you're getting a nice drubbing. You're getting loved by the sewer plant. That's all I can tell you. Now, here's what I would have conducted. I mean, I would have taken this troika of Comrade Paulson, Comrade Cox, and Comrade Bernanke, whatever, and it would go like this. All right, Comrade Paulson, as you can see, we have a cauldron of hot lead over here on your right, and on our left, we have a funnel. And administering the questions today is going to be the sadomasochistic group from San Francisco in Nancy Pelosi's backyard, the people that were in a parade recently, a leather parade, who specialize in this sort of questioning. So get the hot lead going and get the funnels ready. And here's the first question, Mr. Paulson. Can you actually sit there and tell the American people that nobody that you know robbed the American public? Now remember, Mr. Paulson, there are consequences to your answer, as the lead is real hot right now. In fact, the lead is molten. And the funnel is capable of delivering a molten lead dosage without melting, Mr. Paulson. So I'm going to count to five. Let's have a straight, Mr. Paulson. What did you say, Mr. Paulson?
The American people don't care who owns the financial institution.
Mr. Paulson, the lead is very hot, so I'm going to give you another shot. You got 5 seconds. Did anybody that you know steal from the American people? Go ahead, Mr. Paulson.
The American people don't care who owns the financial institution. If a financial institution in this country has...
All right, I'm sorry. You failed the first question because you didn't answer it as you did all day today and yesterday. So therefore, we're going to administer the first dose of lead, Mr. Paulson. Then we're going to give you a chance for the next question.
The government gives them the drugs, builds bigger prisons, passes a three-strike law, and then wants us to sing God Bless America? No, no, no. Not God Bless America. God damn America. That's in the Bible.
So on one hand, we have...
American people don't care.
All right, we got it. So you can turn the music off. You see, we're trying to do this as we're creating it on the spot, because if you think I'm going to take these clowns seriously, you're mistaken. I've given you all of the answers you possibly could need. I've given you solutions that no one listened to. I told you oil from Iraq. I told you oil from Mexico. I told you deport the illegal aliens. I told you put police in every emergency room. I told you deport the illegal aliens in prison. No one hears a word I say, so why should I take you seriously? If you don't take me seriously, why should I take you seriously? So that's why I'm going to resort now to whatever, funneling lead. We'll give them funneling lead. That's all. I wouldn't give them a bailout. You don't want to even listen to me when I say collateralize the loan with 0.5% down with your own real estate. Nobody in Congress heard me. You want me to vote for you? I wouldn't vote for any of them ever again. Now, you tell me McCain is better than Obama, then why is McCain repeating like a dumb parrot what Bush is suggesting, sign on the dotted line or the whole world collapses? No. Doctor first, do no harm. Do not act. And I'm serious about it. By not acting and letting Goldman Sachs and Morgan Stanley go bankrupt would actually invigorate faith in the American financial system. It would give phenomenal strength to the commercial banks. It would give a phenomenal message to all those holding U.S. Treasury bonds around the world that, in fact, there is a sheriff who does take his job seriously, and the dollar now has new value. We're not going to dilute it further. Do you have any idea what a $1 trillion loan to these wonderful gentlemen would do to the value of the dollar? I would say it would diminish the value of the dollar by a significant percentage. Every dollar you hold in your pocket would be worth less than it already is worth. And so therefore, by giving them nothing but a jail sentence, and of course the funnel and lead story, the dollar becomes more valuable. Savage. And money flows in. You watch the channels. You can't believe what you're watching. I don't know how these people stay in business on these the cable news channels. You got CNN, you got Fox, then you got MSLGBT, Microsoft Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual, and Transgender Channel, MSLGBT. And they don't even know what's going on around them. All they know is to push their agenda. So in the case of CNN, they push their they don't even have an agenda. They're too stupid to even know what an agenda is. But with MSLGBT, you know what their agenda is. I need to entertain you because I can't take any more of this. I've given you solutions. You don't care. Now, Savage Radio Stories, Psychological Nudity, includes 75 stories. My Silent Brother, The Electric Saddle, The Electric Blue Saddle Stitch Pants, Fat Al's Tuna, Nutty Friend Had Crazy Mother, Coney Island Wax Figures, Dead Man's Pants, Tippy the Mad Dog, Woodchuck Bill, Fiji Islands in 1969. Happy and Sad Cufflinks, When Pasta Was Spaghetti, First Autopsy, Working on a Cruise Line, Talking to a Bum About God, Love by the Sewer Plant, Mama Savage Calls, and From Immigrant Son to Radio Stardom, plus many more favorites. And frankly, it is a must for anyone who has read a Savage book, of which there are hundreds of thousands of you. It is an original classic from America's storyteller. It's going to be my favorite book, Psychological Nudity, and it can only be purchased on michaelsavage.com, and I suggest you do so today, frankly. I'd like you to listen to one of the stories right now just to relax for a minute. Go ahead, play anything, guys.
We go back now, ladies and gentlemen. Put on your resting cap. We're going to go back in time. We're going back to the Lower East Side of New York. Dad owns a small antiques mart. Little old Michael's cleaning bronzes in the back, and there's Louis the Bum from the Bowery, who in those days, he was a drunk. He wasn't a bum. He worked. Dad would have him in on the weekends, and he'd clean the bronzes and whatever he did down there. I loved Louis. Louis was a great guy. But now you got to understand, this guy was a stoned alcoholic of the old school. skinny like a rail. White guy, skinny like a rail, smoked like unfiltered cigarettes. But one of the nicest guys on earth. He wears the rubber apron. He's cleaning downstairs, does the bronzes. Then, of course, I took over because Dad wanted cheap child labor, and where else are you going to get it from his son, you know? So I'm doing the things. So I got to know Louis over the years, and he taught me various things. Like once we had Louis over to the house. I'll never forget it. I was so proud that my father took this guy who I liked all the way out to Queens and invited him to dinner. I don't know what came over. Maybe it was Thanksgiving or whatever. And Louis had dinner with us at the table, and the guy was surprisingly erudite, and he knew things. And, like, after dinner, we did games, and Louis the drunk showed me how to bend nails. He showed me mind over matter. He took a nail, and he showed me that if you put your fingers, blah, 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 and put your mind on it and keep up the pressure, the nail would bend. I was shocked because I was a skinny kid with little hands, and I bent the nail. And he taught me mind over matter, but it was all molecular because you put the heat and the pressure, blah, 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 eventually that nail is going to bend. But I learned in life it's the same thing. It's all willpower, okay? Now there's another element to the story. So Louis is this kind of guy, interesting, but an alcoholic, and this and that. Years go by. He lives alone in Williamsburg. In those days, Williamsburg was like a slum, zero, you know, oilcloth city, leftover apartments from the last century. No one wanted to be there but the poor. So he lives there alone. He's very lonely. He gets a monkey. He wants a monkey. Now, out of the world, nobody in those days had a monkey. Dogs, yes. Cats, yes. No. Who had a monkey in those days? Louis gets a monkey. But Louis don't just get a spider monkey, one of the skinny little monkeys. Louis gets a woolly monkey. Now, woolly monkeys are already strong. They got a chest on them. They got strong hands. And Louis's in love with this monkey. For a couple of months, they're inseparable. Wherever he goes, there's the monkey. And the monkey's on his shoulder and where he's cleaning and he's happy. Now, Louis was the kind of guy that if he went to a bar in the Lower East Side, I remember the name to this day, named Hamill and Corn. Whatever money he made for my father, he'd take 2 minutes later, he'd be in the bar, and he'd throw money in a jukebox, and he would whistle and sing, and he'd buy everyone drinks till he was broke. He'd stumble out in the street, he would get hit by a car, sleep on a barrel, he didn't care, live for the booze, and that was it, but he had a heart of gold. So Louis gets the monkey, finally has someone to fill his empty nights, and as I say, they were inseparable. Well, as time went on, we get a call, Louis's in the hospital, he's dying. What? The monkey went crazy in his apartment, attacked him, and almost ripped him to pieces. And he suffered for 6 months in the hospital. I don't know which hospital, probably Bellevue, because that's where they all wound up. And the monkey went at him. And you don't know what a monkey's like when it goes crazy. You try to stop an enraged monkey without a weapon. He ripped his neck. He ripped his face. He ripped his arms. He ripped his leg. He ripped his crotch. He ripped his behind. Louis was ripped up pretty bad. And eventually, he took the monkey. I think he grabbed it and threw it out of the window. It just shows you, if he hadn't have done it, he'd be dead today, okay? But a liberal today probably would have tried to talk to the monkey. Louis knew that the instincts had to kick in. It was him or the monkey, and he decided it was better him than the monkey. He didn't consult a liberal book on how to deal with a crazed monkey. He just fought with it and killed it. I think that's what the bottom line is here. But the point is that even a lonely drunk needs companionship at night. In his case, he found the monkey. It was probably the right thing for him to do. But it goes back to the story I opened with, which is that the monkeys are rampaging in India. And the rogue monkeys are breaking into houses, including the daughters of the ruling Congress party.
All right, you got the picture. So this is Louis and the Monkey. It's a story in Psychological Nudity. And I really do recommend this. Louis and the Crazed Monkey is a great story. But there's actually another. And you got to go to michaelsavage.com to buy it. And I suggest you buy it because if you want this as a gift for the holidays, the printing is set, period, end of story. I don't think I'm going to have time to reprint and get it to you. I would suggest you buy it. While dollars are still cheap. And when I think about that now, if you buy it, it's a good time to buy it now. What if the dollar is, what if the dollar comes back? The book will, you will not be billed, by the way, till the book is shipped, interestingly enough. So in a way, I don't know what the currency will be worth then. But there's another, you know, there's another story to this story, which is another metaphor to it. Monkey on the back. We know what that is. A guy has a monkey on his back, like a junkie, right? So the monkey we have on our back is Easy Credit. And the organ grinders would be Paulson and Bernanke. They're the organ grinders who were saying, in order to keep that monkey on your back, you need to keep feeding me quarters or we're going to take the monkey off your back. I don't think that analogy works too well. A must for everyone who has read a Savage book, an original classic from America's Storyteller. I love this book. Politically, what if John McCain's middle name was Jesus, I wrote. That's a great story. Again, no one heard it. What if John McCain's middle name was Jesus? Remember Barack Hussein Obama, how that was a big deal for a while? Then they got, ooh, you can't ask why his name is Hussein. But what do you mean I can't ask? Where'd he get a name Hussein if he's not a Muslim from? Ooh! And why is he ashamed to be a Muslim? I thought that we're all equal. Ooh, don't ask. That's not fair, says MSLGBT, Microsoft Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual, and Transgender Channel. No, you can't ask why Obama's middle name is Hussein, but what if John McCain's middle name was Jesus? All right, hello, my name is John Jesus McCain, and I want to be your president. Imagine what MSLGBT would be saying about that every day. John Jesus McCain, Microsoft Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual, Transgender Channel. Could you imagine what they would say about that with the token guys who were on there, then Pat Buchanan and the other guy, Straw Hair, who they demoted? They finally shut his mouth, the big mouth of him. Anyway, there we are. What else do you want me to do today? Can I go home now? Sharon Stone loses joint custody of son. The court found that Stone's ex-husband can provide a more structured, continuity, stable, secure, and consistent home for the child. How would you like to be Sharon Stone's child for a day? Imagine trying to be Sharon Stone's child for a day. They took the child away, in other words. That's on MichaelSavage.com. Question, why is Ahmad Najad still breathing? Why is Ahmad Najad allowed into America and allowed to leave? Why? McCain suspends campaign to help with bailout. That's such an easy 101. You know what I mean? You want me to talk about that? Leave that to tomorrow already. That's tomorrow's news. Who did it first? Did he, Trump, whatever his name is. I can't even remember Obama's name. I just remembered it. Good. 1-800-400. Newt Gingrich says, kill the Paulson, plan hard. Wow. Wow. Newt suddenly shows himself to be independent. Good move, Newt. Trying to reinvent yourself. Newt Gingrich reinvented. Florida executes a man who raped and killed two young sisters. That story got me so sick last night. I got sick. It made me... got me sick. This guy... Here's the part that got me sick. It's not... Well, yeah, what he did. You got to take a look at this story. Florida executes a man who killed two young sisters after raping their mother. I mean, it's beyond belief. Richard Rick Henyard, 34, was pronounced dead at 8:16 p.m. He had been condemned for the death of 7-year-old Jamalia Lewis and her 3-year-old sister Jasmine. He appeared to be shaking and having a hard time breathing after the lethal injection. His mouthpiece tried to stop it, saying that it would be cruel and unusual punishment to execute him. I would say, never mind what I would say. Let me tell you what this piece of human offal did. Think of the worst thing you've ever seen outside of a latrine, and that would be better than what this human being was. Mr. Henyard, who was executed, and a younger accomplice carjacked Dorothy Lewis and her daughters outside a grocery store in the central Florida town of Eustis in January 1993. Now, look how long this sick liberal system kept this piece of offal alive. 93 till 08, the man's enjoyed his time. Henyard, then 18, raped Lewis and then shot her multiple times at close range, but she survived. He then participated in the shooting deaths of her little daughters after they cried out for their mother. Henyard ate most fried rice. Hey, that's bad for you. That's bad for his health, all that fried stuff. Why would they give him such an unhealthy diet as his last meal? Someone should tell him it's bad for his arteries. Two fried chicken breasts, turkey sausage, fried rice, chocolate chip cookies, and a Coke, said a spokesmouth for the Florida Department of Corrections. So that's the story. You want to hear what he actually did? The woman and her daughters had gone to a Winn-Dixie grocery at 10 p.m., carjacked by Henyard and his 14-year-old friend, Alfonza Smalls. Smalls repeatedly demanded that Lewis shut the girls up because they were crying. At one point, Lewis besieged Jesus for help, and Henyard replies, "This ain't Jesus, this is Satan." Henyard and Smalls raped Mrs. Lewis before Henyard shot her in the leg, neck, mouth, and between the eyes. She was rolled off the side of the road and left for dead. As they were driven away by Henyard and Smalls, the girls yelled, "I want my mommy, mommy, mommy." Short time later, the girls were taken from the car and killed with gunshot wounds to the head. Now, this man has been on death row for 15 years because you're a sick person out there, and you didn't go to the prison with pitchforks and shotguns and demand he be executed. This country has become a nation of worms, a nation of sheep. Play the sheeple sound before I get mad. Play the sound because that's the sound of the American people. You don't have it on. There it is. A handwritten civil rights appeal filed by this piece of human offal in federal court in Jacksonville was denied Tuesday. The appeal alleged that the state's execution team lacks training and could cause a painful death if the IVs aren't properly inserted. You hear this? That was the case during the December 06 execution of Angel Diaz, who took more than twice as long as normal to die, triggering a moratorium that ended this year with new procedures for lethal injection. Well, in Angel Diaz's case, they just should have put taco sauce into the solution. Maybe it would have been absorbed quicker because of the chili pepper. Maybe it would have gone in faster. You know what I'm saying? So that's what a lawyer did. Do you hear this? That's what his lawyer did for you. Oh, it's cruel and inhuman punishment, unusual punishment. I take the lawyer and I get out the hot lead in the funnel if he ever try to... Oh, I'm losing my ability to speak right now. Florida executes man who killed two young sisters after raping their mother. But the story is that you kept them alive for 15 years because you're sick in the head. Because your liberalism is so demented that unless it was your wife and daughters who were raped, then finally you'd understand what we're talking about. But because you live in a nice house in a white suburb, you could afford to be liberal. You could afford to be liberal and vote for Mr. Obama. You can afford to have compassion for Mr. Lewis because he had a bad childhood. Let me tell you something. I know a lot of people had bad childhoods, and many of them, in fact, not all of them, made great things out of their lives. Nobody shot a woman and raped their daughters. I'll be right back. Savage. Welcome back to the Savage Nation. This is definitely not a cable channel. This is not MSLGBT. This is the Savage Nation. 1-800-449-8255. Don't call it. We're sold out. There's no room to get in. We go to Maryland. Chris, welcome. Thanks for being on the Savage Nation. What's on your mind?
Dr. Savage, thanks for taking my call. Just wanted to say, I mean, no more questions, no more just pure anger. I just wanted to say that listening to you is therapeutic to me because I get so pissed off on the way home when I come home, gas, the problem with the market, blah, 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 lies, politicians, Republican, Democrat. You're the only thing that probably helps me off from not breaking things in the house. So I just want to say thank you and salute.
Well, but you see, this is not invented. It's what gets me. It's what works me over. I have to get out of my system on the show. And I can't be alone, Chris. I mean, you know, you're resonating with probably 30 million people. My audience is not that big. It's between, they say, 10 million. I would think with correct ratings, it's closer to 20. But it's irrelevant. You're part of a large group of Americans who are not listened to, talked to, referred to. But don't underestimate your power. John McCain won't even speak to you on this show.
Well, of course not.
Now, what does that tell you about John McCain that he won't come on this show and he wants your vote? I'm getting so pissed off at the goons who run his campaign that I'm going to start going on the assault unless something happens here. Because if he thinks he's going to be Bush 3 and have me vote for him, he is mistaken. I'll pull millions of independent votes from him, and I could care less who wins. How do you like that? That's how I feel today. Now, I want to go back to the Wall Street game. I want to show you how it's played. Here's Paulson asking for $1 trillion with nothing down. Article, Sun Microsystems CEO gets $11 million 2008 pay package. Sun Microsystems, Inc. Chief Executive Jonathan Schwartz received an $11.1 million pay package in the server and software maker's most recent fiscal year. So he got a 44% bump over previous year's $7.7 million compensation. A reward for Sun's recent profitability streak. Now, if you go down into this article, what you find out is that their market share has actually gone down. But the reason the company has a profitability streak, a recent profitability streak, is because Schwartz cut 6,500 jobs over the past 2 years. So the turnaround in Sun Microsystems, according to some, is unsustainable because a lot of the improvement has come from him firing 6,500 workers over the past 2 years. So they reward people on Wall Street for throwing you in the gutter, for borrowing money that they can't pay back, and then they say, hey, look at this. And then they give him $11 million, and they say it's not really as much as he could have made if he had hit certain targets. You hear this? Can you believe the country we're living in? Wouldn't you like to work for a company that all you got to do is fire people, destroy their lives, and then you make more money?
It's unbelievable. And that's the mentality now on Wall Street. This is the exact mentality of the characters that were appearing before Congress. These are the guys who see profitability, not reality. Do you understand what I'm saying to you? If you only look at the bottom line, you're not seeing the entire picture of the business. You got to look at how the company arrived at the bottom line. There are many companies out there who have that have phenomenal bottom lines based upon actual sales versus costs. That's different. To me, that's capitalism. You have a company that makes a product that people want, and you sell it for more, and the company's expanding. That's a profitability that I understand. But if a company makes its profitability look like profit because it fired 6,500 workers, that's called cooking the books. That's called chicanery. That's called funnel and lead economics, as far as I'm concerned. That's the kind of economics that can be rewarded only with funnel and hot lead. That's all. Next case. Play me a song right now. I got a minute 14 left in this hour. I'm already, I'm out of wind already for the hour. I gave you a good shot for the money. You know what? That's all. Me. What is this now? Henry Paulson, Shane. Oh, yeah. Wait, I meant to get to this earlier. Listen, World Tribune had a great article today that we put up at michaelsavage.com showing that Paulson, it says, Henry Paulson, chain of quotes since 07 and his Democratic DNA. In other words, Paulson is a Democrat, a liberal Democrat. That's why he's asking for a bailout. You understand that? Robert Novak called attention to Paulson's Democrat DNA last October. Listen to this. The former Goldman Sachs CEO does not act or sound much like a conservative Republican to the GOP remnant at the Treasury. It's not in Hank Paulson's DNA, one official told me. Is he loyal to Bush? Hank is for Hank. Paulson marched to his own drummer by naming Eric Mindick, chairman of Eaton Park Capital, to head the Asset Managers Committee on Financial Markets. A former Goldman Sachs colleague of Paulson's, you hear this? Mindick is a top-level Democratic fundraiser. He was in Senator John Kerry's inner circle for the 2004 presidential campaign, and he backed Senator Barack Obama, and he works for Paulson, and Bush says, salute these bums.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Faces an historic crisis in our financial system. We must pass legislation to address this crisis. If we do not, credit will dry up with devastating consequences for our economy. People will no longer be able to buy homes and their life savings.
Oh, blow it out your pipe.
Businesses will not have enough money to pay their employees.
What a bunch of garbage. You know, John, I'm not voting for you. Period. That's it. That's it. I don't want to hear anymore. Doctor first, do no harm. All he's doing is parroting the Bush-Paulson troika. Now it's Comrade McCain, along with Comrade Bush and Comrade Paulson and Comrade Bernanke and Comrade Cox. I'm finished with this Republican machine. I'm not voting for Obama because he's more dangerous. But don't expect me to go along with the old game of, well, they got nowhere to go. Yes, I do. I won't vote for you at all. That's all there is to it. That did it. That was the nail in the coffin. And if you don't like it, then don't listen to my show anymore. I'm not voting for this clown. Period. End of story. Unless this guy turns around in some way, I'm not voting for him. I will vote in the election. I'll go vote against gay marriage. I'll go to support traditional marriage. And I'll vote on local issues. I'm not voting for this hack. That's all there is to it. He wants me to give a $1 trillion check to the same bums who stole it in the first place. Niet, no, sir, not going to happen. Period of the story, 1-800-449-8255. Now, I'm telling you again, the first edict of a good doctor is first do no harm. That used to be taught in medical schools. It was called the Hippocratic Oath, which had been part of medical school curriculums, well, certainly in America since there were medical schools. But for 2,000 years, doctors would graduate, and they'd have to swear to the Hippocratic Oath, which said, first do no harm, doctor do no harm, meaning if you're not sure what to do, don't harm the patient. In other words, don't give them an unnecessary colonoscopy, which is a fraud to begin with when only 7% of polyps become tumorous. Tell the patient that only 7% of polyps become cancerous before you stick a pipe into them and possibly damage their guts because you're a hack and a butcher who should have been working in a lox factory. Or don't put that child on Ritalin simply because he's a brilliant little kid or he can't sit through another boring day in class, doctor. You're a drug peddler worse than a crack dealer. So the rule was first do no harm. Now medicine became nothing but a business for 99% of them. Not all, 99, that's all. 99% of them add up how much they can make on procedures, how many chickens they can run through the mill, how many drugs they can put down how many children's mouths. That's pediatrician today. There were pediatricians 20 years ago who gave no drugs at all. They used diet. They used various behavioral therapies. And it worked real fine until the drug companies came along. And just like Paulson of Treasury, they said in order to increase profits, you got to put Ritalin down a child's throat. So if you want to use the equivalent of the profitability scheme, go ahead. But don't expect me to go along with it. My argument is to the contrary. You got a bunch of guys who crashed the economy into the iceberg. Now they're saying, give us the wheel of the ship again. I'd say I'll put you in the hold before I give you the wheel again. You're going down into the brig, Johnson. Now, what do I mean by first do no harm? My argument is to the contrary, that if we did not bail out Goldman Sachs and Morgan Stanley, which is what the $1 trillion is for, by the way, it's to bail him and his friends out. Make no mistake about it. If we didn't bail them out in this, the last remaining investment banks slash whatever they made themselves Sunday night went under, what would happen is the world would get a signal that we now have a new sheriff in town. It's no longer the Wild West gunslinger George Bush, laissez-faire neoliberal economy. We're going to crack down. We have a fiscal conservative in power, and we're going to make the dollar stronger, not weaker, by letting the dead wood go up in the chimney. The dead wood has to go. You're out of business. Good. Goodbye. We'll take your assets. We'll sell off the buildings, and we'll use that money in the treasury to try to cover some of what you did to us. So, in other words, the signal goes out that we're a fiscally conservative nation, not a fiscally neoliberal, internationalist, New World Order economy, which means we don't know what we're talking about. Just please don't bust us by selling off our T-bills. So let's say you're China and you hold a whole trillion dollars in T-bills. So China gets the message, wait a minute, America's actually cracking down on weak, corrupt banks. This is good. I want to invest more in America, not less, because the crooks are out of the picture. Bad management is gone. They're not going to put it in bad real estate anymore. So I'll put more money in. And other sovereign funds, such as those from Saudi Arabia, would pour back into the country. Instead of retreating further, we'd have a greater investment in the country. So I want to show you that what I just said to you, my plan, is not even being discussed in Congress. Now, surely you have to admit that my plan has merit. It's certainly worth consideration. Why has it not been heard? Why did not one Republican senator suggest this today, that let them go bankrupt for their bad behavior? And after all, I thought the conservative message for years was there should be consequences to your behavior. Drink and drive, you lose your license. Use a gun, you go to jail. Crash a company, we investigate you and we'll put you in jail if there's any chicanery. We don't give you another blank check. The prisons are full of people who rob people. The prisons are full of white-collar criminals who robbed little old ladies of their life savings, so to speak. Well, why do you assume that these guys are any different when they've robbed a lot of little old ladies and little old men of their life savings by crushing pensions, by crushing 401ks? You want to give these people more money? No. Niet, niet, niet to the new comrades. Doctor, first do no harm. I say do not act. And if you do act, and if you really insist that they need money,
First of all, do what Charles Schumer said. Give them $150 billion to begin with, only. And only if they collateralized $150 billion with $5 billion of their own personal and corporate real estate holdings. Did you hear what I just said to you? Could you get a loan from a bank today with nothing down? No, you could not. I don't know what the current terms are, but they're never going to give you money unless you collateralize it with something, whether it's a piece of real estate, other property that you may own, a car, a plane, a boat. That's collateral, right, if you own it? Well, Mr. Paulson has ownership. Bernanke owns something. Cox must own something. The directors of Morgan are rich guys. The director of Goldman, directors of Goldman are rich guys. They own property, right? They have real estate. So you say, all right, you want a check for $150 billion because you're never getting $700 out of us. You're asking for more than you need because, you know, that's your game. You're getting $150 now until December, but you're going to collateralize this with 100% of your real estate holding, not 10, not 20, not 50, not 70. You're going to put up 100% of every piece of property you own from here to Switzerland. I'll be right back.
Why do you think Bush, McCain, Obama, why don't they want to talk to you?
You should ask that from them. Don't ask me.
Well, you're regarded
as...
We are for talks and dialogues. But you've been regarded as a hostile state, and there are many things that Americans worry about with regard to Iran. You would agree that you are, for one...
biggest disgrace in the entire media, which is filled with lowlifes. But Larry King is the lowest of the low. This is the kind of guy who has Hitler on his show, the new Hitler, who says, I want to exterminate the Jews of Israel. And Larry King saw, hey, how do you like being in New York? You want a little garlic with me? How about a garlic bread? You would agree that you're a controversial figure, huh? Larry, I spit on you. Larry, I never liked you. I knew you were a low-class bum. I always knew you were a low-class bum. But I had no idea, Larry King, that you were this low. Now, if you really want to hear what Michael Savage thinks of Larry King, you haven't heard it yet. But this is not a nightclub show. This is a national radio show. And I'm saying on national radio that Larry King is the kind of Jew to stay alive another day. That's the kind of shameful man he is. That for ratings, he would have this man, this thing, this creature, who threatens the entire world with his insane rhetoric. But I don't just blame Larry King. He's a symptom of the same sick government media complex that's gotten us where we are today, whether it be financial or otherwise. Why is Amanajad allowed to come to this country at all when he's threatened to kill Americans, when he's behind killing our boys, when there are guys in this country who lost legs, arms, and eyes in Iraq, planted by Iranian agents? Why is he not arrested? Why is his plane not shot out of the sky over the Atlantic Ocean? Why, oh, why? Because, my friends, the answer is simple. The answer is because we're in a global economy, and there's an awful lot of goods traded with the United States of America's gangsters, Wall Street bankers, through back channels. An awful lot of oil flows in and out of Dubai into Iran. An awful lot of goods and services come from America through Dubai, our good friends, our trading partners, who we wanted to give our port security over to. I don't think this country exists anymore. You may say, well, I don't know if we can maintain. I've heard people say we can't maintain our sovereignty. What sovereignty? What sovereignty is there? Show me the sovereignty. You think because you have a flag in your house and you have a copy of the Constitution, you have a sovereign nation? I would argue that we don't have a sovereign nation. I would argue it's been over since George Bush took power. I would argue that we've lost our sovereignty a long time ago. I would argue that when Caligula in ancient Rome put a horse in the Senate, and he said that the horse has more sense than most of you senators, and we're now a dictatorship and goodbye to the old Republic of Rome, I said we're closer to Caligula than we are to Jefferson. We've gone from Jefferson to Caligula in a couple hundred years. Now, I've given you history lessons on this show for 15 years, and I've showed you that if you remember anything of history, whether it be in high school or college, you think Rome is a dictatorship. Well, it was under the emperors. But before that, it had been a republic. And then a group of very evil men took control of Rome, and fundamentally they nullified the Congress of their time. They made them into a rubber stamp for the emperor. If you tell me that we're different than the imperial Rome, I would argue you're wrong. We have absolutely no redress in this country, particularly when you see low-life gutter rats like Larry King, not only a member in good standing of the government media complex, but the government media complex himself. How else do you think he gets Hitler on his show? In other words, when you have a government media complex that's this tight and this omnipotent and this omnipresent as well, show me where the recourse is for the people. You're telling me you can call up your senator or your congressman? You live in New York, you can call Hillary Clinton or Charles Schumer. You could reach them ever? Never. Not in a million years. But they're supposed to be your representative. They're going to represent you where? Nonsense. They don't represent you. California, Barbara Boxer, Dianne Feinstein, they represent you? So where's the sovereignty? Show me where the representative government is. The only recourse you have right now is through the internet, writing, you know, in essence, letters to the editor, blogging, responding to news articles with a little blog item, which is why they're so popular. It's a valve. Calling talk radio, et cetera. And that's where your last outlets are. But they have no effect whatsoever. We, the people, have been screaming like injured dogs for 20 years to close the borders, get the illegal aliens out of here, clean up the schools and the hospitals, throw the illegal aliens out of the prisons. They're killing us. We've been saying clean up Wall Street for 10 years. Nothing happens. Do you know why? Why? Because we are no longer not even a republic, not even an empire. We're neither. We are an oligarchy, which is even different than an empire. We have become a pure oligarchy. And I explained to you on Monday on this show what an oligarchy is. So if you have an ancestor buried in a veteran cemetery somewhere in America, I suggest you go over the weekend and put flowers on their grave. At the same time, sit there and cry your heart out, because George Bush put a knife in the heart of the U.S. Constitution, which I think forever this country is dead. And so all we have left is ourselves for as ever long as the oligarchs decide to permit us to talk to each other, which I do not think will be for very long. I believe that after this election, I would say that the odds are very high that gangsters in the government, representatives in the government, will close down talk radio under one guise or another, calling it the Freedom of Speech Act, as they steal the very lifeblood of freedom of speech in this country. And they will do so because they do not only do they have absolute power, which they already have, but they don't want any criticism. One thing you'll notice about dictators is they don't like anyone calling them dictators or anyone calling them what they are. They want you to look up to them. That's the next step in America. You're going to be forced to vote, and if you don't vote, you might be punished or put in jail. Just as in Uganda under Idi Amin, you will be required to vote for the supreme commander. You will also be required to do other things that you'll find repugnant, but sure enough, you'll do them because you've lost your sovereignty, and the next you're going to lose your manhood. In the next segment, we have Bill Donahue, God bless his soul, of the Catholic League, the only Christian group that I know of that stood up to this Hitler, Ahmadinejad in New York, in a protest with some Jewish groups. I'm sad to say that the Quakers, I don't even know why Quakers would do this, but the Quaker groups, shame on them through eternity, have chosen to honor Ahmadinejad, the Hitler of our time. So the American Friends Service Committee honored the Hitler of our time, the man who wants to kill all of the Jews. And it was only the Catholics through Bill Donahue who have stood up to the murderer, the man who will drag the world into the Third World War unless he is stopped. So here we are all over again. It's the pre-Holocaust in your lifetime. And once again, it's the good Catholics standing up with their Jewish friends against the Hitler of our time. And the next time you read and you want to talk, you phony liberals, about what you would have done in Nazi Germany, I'll tell you what you would have done in Nazi Germany. You would have pushed children into the gas chambers to stay alive another day and shovel a sausage down your bow with a rubber truncheon, beating crippled children into an oven. if they promised him another day in front of the mic.
Hey, so how do you feel in New York? You want to split a matzah?
Savage.
Welcome back to the Savage Nation. I am honored to have on my show right now Dr. William Donahue, currently the president and CEO of the Catholic League for Religious and Civil Rights, which is the nation's largest Catholic civil rights organization. The important thing for you to know is that he stood today with his Jewish friends against the visit to New York City of today's Hitler. But there's more to the story. There were actually Christian groups that honored the Hitler of our time, the new Hitler. Bill Donahue, what a strange and horrible time we're living in. Thank you for being on the Savage Nation.
Well, thank you, and thank you for bringing attention to this very important issue. You're right to say that this guy is the Hitler of our time. I hope people get that through their heads. They just think he's a little punk. It's more than that. This is a man who has, we have information from 10 different countries that he's engaged in nuclear activity. We know this through the International Atomic Energy Agency. The UN Security Council has passed 3 sanctions on this guy. He says he's going to wipe Israel off the face of the map. I mean, this is a man who is a threat not simply to Israel. He's a threat to destabilize the entire world, and ineluctably that brings the United States in. And if we've learned anything, Israel is the only beacon of democracy in that part of the world. It's a friend of the United States. We can't allow this guy to even attempt to pull off what Hitler did a couple of generations ago.
Well, Bill, look, I know where you stand, but I'm shocked to say that not all Christian groups agree with you. I cannot believe that this new Hitler in New York was honored today, so-called. Who honored him?
Actually, the honoring is going to go on tomorrow evening. You're talking about 5 different Christian left-wing groups, and I emphasize every one of them are on the left. Most prominent, the World Council of Churches. There's a group, there's a hodgepodge group called Religions for Peace, the American Friends Service Committee, basically Quakers, the Quaker United Nations Office, and the Mennonite Central Committee. Now, let's just take the World Council of Churches. They're the biggest of them all. These are the same people who, when Arafat died, they praised him as a man of peace. These are the people who have led the divestment campaign against Israel. When people, radical Muslims were out there shooting people in the streets and killed a nun, in fact, and shot her in the back because of these Danish cartoon things, they said, well, the violence was wrong, but so was the Danish cartoons, the ultimate in moral equivalence. So these people, and let me tell you something, while there are no Catholics that I know of involved in this thing tomorrow, we have them within our ranks, too. They say they believe in peace and justice. They believe in surrender. They never found a cause worth fighting for. Not to defend Jews, not to defend Americans, not freedom for anybody. I mean, these people are an absolute, utter disgrace. And to think that in the name of Christianity, they're going to embrace this bum, it's actually enough to make me vomit.
Good for you, man. You need a radio talk show. You're great. Now, Bill, William Donahue, remember who you're listening to. This is not just a caller. Dr. William Donahue is the president and CEO of the Catholic League. Okay, just get it through your head. He earned his PhD from NYU. He serves on the board of directors of the National Association of Scholars and New York State chapter of NAS. He knows what he's talking about. It represents millions of good, God-fearing Catholics around America. And he's telling you, as you listen to this show, The Savage Nation, something that's not on any website that I can find, but the Hitler of our time is in New York being wined and dined, his ring being kissed by Larry King. God condemn him to Hades for what Larry King has done. He makes me sick. But I won't go into Larry King again. What in the heck would Mennonites have to do with this? Why would Mennonites be saluting Hitler?
I was told today by a reporter that they talked to some of these people, and they said, well, we believe in dialogue. You know what? They don't get it, though, Mike. Dialogue is a means. It's not an end. And the means has to be dialogue, certainly. The end has to be some degree of consensus so that we can live in a civil world. These people are engaged in dialogue for the sake of dialogue, and a guy like Ahmadinejad exploits them very brilliantly, by the way. He's not just totally nuts. People say, oh, he's crazy. No, there's a difference between being nuts and being evil. Get it, people? The man is evil. He knows what he's doing. He's taking these peace, I call them surrender-type people, into this stage of dialogue to give him a platform. As a matter of fact, the American Friends Committee told a reporter today, he then asked me about it, They said, well, we've been engaged in dialogue for 3 years with him. Well, what the hell have they actually accomplished in 3 years? Just last week, he said he wants to wipe off Israel off the face of the map again, that the Holocaust is a myth. I mean, you know, what is the purpose?
So the World Council of Churches, the American Friends Service Committee, the Mennonites, who else stand now in the Hall of Shame?
Well, there's this hodgepodge group called Religions for Peace. They're very slippery. We called their office. They say, well, this is just Religions for Peace USA. Oh, we said, but don't you share the same address at 777 United Nations Plaza with the World Conference of Peace? Yes, we'll have to get back to you, but they're really a little bit different. Oh, what, do they run across the hall from you?
And so who is the World Conference for Peace? Who's behind them?
It's just a hodgepodge of Catholics and Protestants and Jews and people.
Well, these are the same people who came after me, Bill. They've marched outside radio stations calling me every name under the sun. And here they are kissing the ring of the man who would wipe Jews off the planet. What does that tell you about them? Aren't they really fundamentally the neo-Nazis or neo-fascists of our time under the guise of being peacenicks?
I think, okay. Now, when you add it under the guise of being peacenicks, because I was going to say, Mike, they're probably worse than that. You know, the brown shirts were identifiable. All right, and people had swastikas. At least you knew who they were. These are people who poise themselves, and they present themselves to middle-class Americans as if they're the voice of reason. We just want to talk to the guy, and, you know, maybe we'll change his mind. These people themselves are either in utter denial, and that's the best thing I can say about them, or they are tacitly cooperating with Ahmadinejad.
In other words, they're fellow travelers, Jew haters.
They hate Jews, they hate Israel, and they hate the United States for supporting Israel. I hope the listeners get it through their heads.
Well, I'm amazed, you know, Bill, not amazed, I'm thrilled that the Catholic League is standing with the Jews today, because you're the only ones doing so. Has any Protestant group stood with the Jews against Ahmadinejad?
I have good news for you. Dr. Richard Land of the Ethics and Liberty Commission of the Southern Baptist Convention is on board.
God bless him.
He was a Jewish fellow. He became an evangelical. He has Traditional Values Coalition. I am very proud that more and more people, because of the good work of Beth Galinsky, who is the person behind this from a group called Women International, that more and more responsible voices are coming on board every day. You know, it's like anything else, Mike. It's hard to get those first few. We were right there with Beth when she contacted me. And people are a little gun-shy about taking on these radical Muslims. Once they saw that you could break the ice, and you got two or three, and then you got a few more, and then all of a sudden you got a surge.
Why is Ahmadinejad not arrested in New York City by New York City Police Department when he's a world maniac who is likely to drag the world into a world war where there'll be tens of millions dead? What in the world is going on that this country doesn't recognize that if it was 1939 and there was a UN and Hitler was invited to New York, had he been arrested on site, there would have been no World War II? Can't they understand what's going on in front of their eyes?
Well, I think the blame is not so much with the New York City police, but with the people at the United Nations. How can you invite someone in? Let's let everything else go about Ahmadinejad. Just focus on one thing. How can you, as the head of the UN, bring in a man who says, I want to wipe off the face of the map a sovereign nation which belongs to the UN? It stands the UN's ideas and principles right on their head. I mean, that to me is the greatest blasphemy of this whole thing, that this man can come in here and essentially stick his middle finger right in the face of all the member states of the United Nations, all Americans, and all Jews, and then for these phony, appeasing Christians to sit there and break bread with him tomorrow night. I hope people look at www.925rally.com. .org. Get the information. We're going to be out in front of in the street. Hail, rain, or shine. Let it rain tomorrow. We don't care. 5:30 in the street, 42nd Street, right in front of the Grand Hyatt, right down the block from Grand Central. Join with Catholics, Jews, Protestants, and others, and good people who are not afraid to stand up to this bum. Despite, already I got a death threat yesterday from some wacko, but it's not going to stop me. It's not going to stop anybody else.
God bless you. Bill, let me ask you another couple of questions here. And I know you don't want to join me in my condemnation of people in the media, but have you seen these filth in the media who are kissing Ahmadinejad's ring just to get an interview with him? Doesn't that make you a little crazy?
Well, particularly if they're not going to press him hard. I mean, I've known Larry King for a number of years. I have to say that Larry's shtick has always been to play softball. I hardly can expect him to change at this point, although he certainly...
Yeah, but 60 Minutes kissed his ring. Mike Wallace kissed his ring. There's not been one American media figure who's asked him a real question.
I am more angry at 60 Minutes and Mike Wallace because they have a reputation of grilling people. Larry does. He's Mr. Softball, so I can't be too critical there. He's consistent at least. But 60 Minutes is totally inconsistent. They should have grilled him. And I was on the Today Show a year ago, and I told them right to their face, the two deans from Columbia University, that they should resign immediately because they're a disgrace to bring this bum into Columbia. Now, Matt Lauer had a good question. He says, you mean he's not entitled to freedom of speech? So no. If he comes to New York, he can go to the Beacon Theater, he can go to Madison Square Garden, he can go to Central Park. A university exists for one purpose, the pursuit of truth. If we haven't come to the realization that this man here, who denies the Holocaust ever even existed, and it is nothing but a fascist, that he has nothing legitimate to air, to offer to the pursuit of truth, then we might as well close down the university. And that's what angers me about the UN. It stands on a principle that all nations, when they have discord, they can come to like a big marriage counselor and try to resolve it. This guy is basically saying to the marriage counselor, you know what, you can do it. You can put it where the sun doesn't shine.
Well, let's talk about the Holocaust for 1 minute, because when this bum, the Hitler of our time, says the Holocaust didn't exist, he's not only insulting the memory of the dead Jews, but also the dead Christians. And Max Eidemont, a historian who wrote a great book in the 60s called Jews, God, and History, has indicated through evidence that for every one Jew who was exterminated in the Holocaust, 1.2 Christians were killed in the Holocaust by Hitler's minions, many of whom were Catholic priests, Catholic nuns, or Catholic people with a conscience like yourself, my friend. And so, therefore, this is not simply a Jewish question. This is a Jewish-Christian question. And I'm surprised that more churches in this country don't stand up to this Hitler. I'm shocked, frankly.
Well, you know, a lot of them have bought into this whole idea of peace and social justice. We have it within the Catholic Church as well, I'm ashamed to say. You've got it within Judaism. You've got it within Protestantism. There's this idea that if we just talk and have conversation and break bread and have dialogue, that maybe we can change their mind.
Well, don't you remember what happened when Neville Chamberlain went and spoke to Hitler after he invaded another country? And Chamberlain came back to England and said, I've just spoken to President Hitler or Chancellor Hitler, and he assures me that he's not going to invade another country. Peace is at hand. Remember that famous speech?
Absolutely right.
Well, there's dialogue. Bill, there's dialogue for you. They went and invaded the next country.
We expect children to be naive, and they can be excused. Adults have no such excuse. These people tomorrow night are saying, yes, I know you're a threat to us and the rest of the world. We'd like to have you for dinner. Now, I just have a message to the people. Listen to this. If somebody comes to your door tonight and says, I'm planning to take you out and your family, do you invite the guy in for meatballs and spaghetti? I mean, what the hell is going on here?
Council of Churches condemned. American Friends Service Committee condemned. The Mennonite group meeting with him condemned. Religions for Peace condemned. All of these groups should rot in hell, as far as I'm concerned, for what they're doing here, which is saluting the Hitler of our time. William Donahue, before you leave again, please give out the address of the website where the rally will take place for good people with conscience to join you tomorrow night.
Yes, thank you so much. The website address we can get more information is www.925rally.org. And it's going to be at 5:30 tomorrow evening, Thursday the 25th, 5:30 in front of the Grand Hyatt on 42nd Street by Lexington Avenue, right down the block from Grand Central Station. Rain, hail or shine, we're going to be there, and we need as many people to register their voice of protest so that the media get the point to the people in their living room that we may have problems on Wall Street, we may have an election, but we got a Hitler in our backyard. We got to do something about it.
Well, thank God that there are still Christians like you out there. William Donahue, Catholic League, thank you so much for being with us on the Savage Nation.
Thank you for giving me this opportunity, Mike.
Beautiful, beautiful. It's 47 minutes after the hour, and I'm going to take a break in a minute. I know there are other issues out there than this, but this is an example of the moral meltdown in America, that you'd have groups such as the World Council of Churches, the American Friends Service Committee, a Quaker group,
the Mennonite group, the Religions for Peace group, standing with Hitler in your time. Shame on them all, but shame most importantly to Larry King and his fellow travelers in the media. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Music. I just got an alarming email. Dear Michael, I live in the New York radio market, says the email. And I think that Michael is so far the only talk radio host who seems to understand what's really happening with this bailout. But listen to what's coming. And I don't mean to alarm you, but I'm reading it to you because I checked it out. I want to make Savage aware of something else that a close friend of mine who works for the Army found on a military website. Basically, beginning October 1, there will be, for the first time in this country's history, a special new deployment of military within the United States. Although it's touted as an emergency response force, they also mention that they will help, quote, control civil unrest. If you read between the lines, it's chilling, especially considering the extra legal powers co-opted by our government. And here's the link, and it's going to go up onto michaelsavage.com. So Bush has now planned to deploy the United States military within our borders for the first time in our history, October 1. Ladies and gentlemen, if this is true, what is the October surprise that the government has in mind for us? And looking backwards and looking forwards, do you think that the meltdown of our economy and the gangsters demanding a bailout or else a gun to our head making us an offer we can't refuse, so to speak, has anything to do with putting military in the streets? Let me go on. It says, I find the situation especially frightening because I have only found out within the last 2 days that the Federal Reserve, although very cleverly named, is actually a private bank. Why is a private bank authorized to print our currency? What is actually going on in this country? I would really appreciate you bringing this link to Michael Savage's attention. Thanks so much, and the reader will remain anonymous. So we'll find out more about this as time goes on. We'll put this link to the Army up on michaelsavage.com, and you can judge for yourself what the oligarchs have in mind for you after they have hijacked the economy. I warned you they're going to also hijack your very freedoms. Perhaps some of us will disappear, as in the bad days of Pinochet. Perhaps as in the days of Pinochet, those who stood up and spoke out will simply disappear as black cars pull up and they're pulled into a car and never seen again. Perhaps as in the wonderful, horrible, horrible dark days of the ex-Soviet Union when people were taken off the streets and never seen again, that is soon coming to a theater near you, all as a result of these nice, soft-spoken men in horrible suits and ugly ties. I'm not given to conspiracy theories except when I think they're right. And so I thought I'd share that with you. Now, if you want a take-home message from today's show, it's force Paulson and the gang to collateralize the loan they're asking for with their own property. The buildings that Goldman Sachs are in, Morgan Stanley, the houses in the Hamptons, New York, Washington, D.C., Vail, wherever, their airplanes, all hard real estate values, all hard assets put up as collateral. If they're telling us that they're so sure the money that they want will work, then let them show us that with a good faith down payment in form of their real estate holdings as collateral, just as they'd expect from you if you go to a bank. Did you hear what I just said to you? You know, you don't have to be a liberal or a conservative to understand when a person makes sense. I make sense. I'm 100% right on the bailout. Doctor first, do no harm. That's the first rule of medicine. It should be the first rule of an economic recovery. You certainly don't use the butcher who slipped during the operation and cut the jugular vein, and you don't give him a scalpel again in an operating theater. You put him in prison and take away his medical license. You take away his license to practice medicine. You take away Paulson's license to practice financial monopoly. You get rid of Bernanke and tell him to go get a shave and work on the roadside putting up Burma shave signs. You put Chris Cox under a grilling with a swinging lamp and a truncheon, and you ask him why he let these gangs get away with this without regulation. But then again, I live in a dream world. But then again, I'm an idealist, and I admit it. But then again, I'm Michael Savage, and I don't work for the government media complex. But then again, I'm Michael Savage. I don't work for MSLGBT, Microsoft Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual, Transgender Network. I work for you, the American people. I do my job. We in the media are supposed to be watchdogs, not lapdogs. I hope that you understand the difference.
Next up will be Rick Roberts sending me to the poorhouse, giving away copy after copy of Psychological Nudity, available only on michaelsavage.com. Right through the holidays, you'll never see it in a bookstore.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
I'll suspend my campaign and return to Washington after speaking at the Clinton Global Initiative. I've spoken to Senator Obama and informed him of my decision, and I've asked him to join me. I'm calling on the President to convene a leadership meeting from both houses of Congress, including Senator Obama and myself. It's time for both parties to come together to solve this problem.
I think the message is, if you need us, if I can be helpful, I'm prepared to be there at any point. But keep in mind, again, I'm talking to Nancy Pelosi, Harry Reid, the congressional leadership, Hank Paulson. I'm talking to them every single day. We've been working around the clock. And, you know, presidents are going to have to deal with more than one thing at a time. It's not necessary for us to think that we can only do one thing and suspend everything else.
Well, I guess the American people will be the judge of that. This is Rick Roberts setting in for Michael Savage. Michael, thank you for the opportunity once again. And you're on the Savage Nation, 1-800-449-8255, 1-800-449-TALK. Man, there are so many different, of course, Michael was talking about Ahmadinejad, the new Hitler of our time. And there is no other definition you can give this this evil entity other than the new Hitler of our time. It is beyond me. It is absolutely beyond me how this guy can be welcomed into the United Nations on American soil, and greeted with open arms. It just, I don't even know where to go with that. I mean, what do you do with that? How many lives would be saved if we just scoop the guy up and put him in one of those cells that nobody knows about? Now, I don't know where he went. He said, "Oh, I'll be right back." Getting a bagel, and he's gone. We'll see where that goes. I guess we're debating the debate. First, McCain says he's going to suspend his campaign to go to Washington to work on the bailout. I guess from a political standpoint would seem somewhat noble. And then, of course, not to be outdone, Barack Obama shoots back. Well, the president's got to be able to do more than one thing at one time. I'm going to continue to campaign. If you need me, I'm right here. I'm in contact with these people all the time. Okay, now it's basically a standoff. You know, the only thing I can think of is if they do come up with a plan towards the end of the week or maybe the weekend, then perhaps politically speaking, McCain gets credit. You know, McCain 2 and Obama 1. Again, playing politics with something so, so important to the American taxpayer. You know, I had a thought, and Michael has talked about this continuously. If the CEOs, 24, 25, 26 of which the FBI are now investigating for fraud. If these guys walk away with golden parachutes, if these guys are made to be held accountable for their actions and their assets taken from them and then banished from working in the financial district for time immemorial, why not the politicians that consistently voted against the oversight of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac? I mean, this is not a surprise to the people in the Beltway. It's only a surprise to us because, you see, do as I say, not as I do. That theme runs throughout the Beltway in Washington. Going back to early 2000, you know, there were red flags and alarms going off about the size and scope of Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae. You know, even Bush, whether you like him or whether you don't, in 2003 said, look, man, this is getting out of hand. We need a federal oversight. We need this. And who stopped it? Who stopped it all? Not only in 2003, but 2005, when it got really, really bad. Even Greenspan talked about the need for some very, very aggressive oversight into these two burgeoning government programs that were getting out of control. Who stopped it each time? Barney Frank was one. You know, that slobbering fool. And Schumer was another one. There were a whole host of Democratic characters that roadblock any legislation to oversee these two entities. Now what happens? Everything that we were warned about, has come to fruition. So my thinking is this. The CEOs that were at the helm, they were basically at the helm as we were making our way through the fog on that fateful night that we ran aground. Yes, they were at the helm on the Valdez. Why are they not out? Why do they get a pass? Why do the CEOs, why do we banish them, and rightfully so, from working in these industries again, but the politicians that consistently, year after year after year after year, roadblocked legislation to keep this from happening, why do they get to keep their jobs? Why? As far as I'm concerned, you take the politicians like Frank and Schumer and all the rest that continually threw roadblocks for political gain, not for public service, but political gain. You take them and, hey, let the CEOs and the politicians, let them both go through the want ads. You through with that section? Yeah, let me have it. Okay. Anything there? No, nope, nope. Holding out for a management job. San Diego, Tony. Tony, thanks for waiting. You're on the Savage Nation. How you doing, Tony?
Good afternoon, Rick. I'm getting to listen to you twice this week. My comment is, if it wasn't for you and Michael, we wouldn't have any voice in what's going on. Here are these gangsters who make the guys in Little Italy look like angels. They're pulling the wool over our eyes. I really don't believe anything that Paulson has to say. I really don't believe anything that comes out of the government's mouth. Why should I believe them this time? I don't know if you know this, Chris Cox, I guess, said that in February that this was not really going to be a problem. It's turned into a tsunami. Yeah. If we keep giving them money, I think it just gets worse. So my thing is, don't bail them out. We shouldn't bail them out, and that's what they're going to try to do over the weekend, and John McCain's going to probably be leading the charge.
Now, Tony, you're absolutely right, and Michael Savage has been talking about this for a long, long time. As a matter of fact, Presidente Jorge Bush is scheduled to speak a little later, and Michael's been calling for that for how long? Forever. Maybe Bush is finally getting the picture. Well, hey, you know, the third largest show in America with all these listeners, maybe I'll pay attention next time. That's all we're asking. We're asking that our elected leaders serve us and not their political affiliation first. That's what we're asking. And it makes absolutely no sense to me whatsoever why the politicians that continually roadblock this should keep their jobs. The CEOs shouldn't. The bank execs, the board members, the CFOs, none of these people should ever work in the financial industry again, anything remotely concerning itself with being subsidized by the American government. They should not keep their jobs. Guess what? The politicians shouldn't either. You know, why does Barney Frank get to go off to his bathhouse someplace? Yes, his bathhouse someplace. Oh, boy, I sure screwed that one up. Oh, well. All right. How about a 3-martini lunch tomorrow? Why? Why does he get to keep his job? You know, whether you're Republican, Democrat, Independent, or somewhere in between, makes no difference. This guy did not serve the American people. He didn't serve the country. Same thing with Schumer. Same thing with Chucky Schumer and all the rest. It just seems to me that, you hold people accountable. You're held accountable, aren't you? I know I am. Let's go to Tracy. Tracy in Louisiana. Tracy, thanks for waiting. You're on the Savage Nation. Hi.
Yes. Hello. How you doing?
Good.
I believe that it doesn't matter, Republican, Democrat, whatever, that basically there is an agenda, and whoever you vote for, it doesn't matter that basically whoever you're voting for the person that's going to fulfill that agenda.
Well, Tracy, I understand, what is it I'm trying to say? I understand what you say. And I know a lot of people feel like, well, my vote doesn't count. It's just one guy. They're going to do what they want to do anyway. That's not altogether true. They didn't get those jobs by magic. They didn't just appear in Washington and somebody said, hey, you over there in the green car, you come over here and be an assembly person. You be a congressman. Somebody had to elect these people. And generally speaking, they're elected if they tell people what they want to hear. All right. And then they know because they can look at the historical record, no matter what they promised during the campaign. Generally speaking, the American people lose interest and wander away to catch the newest episode of Lost or American Idol. And then they continue doing what they need to do to keep their jobs and their seat at the table of power. I disagree with the fact that it doesn't matter. It always matters to some level. It always does. Dan, Salt Lake City. Dan, thanks for waiting. You're on the Savage Nation. How you doing, Dan?
Good. Hey, Rick, you know, this crisis really is just a margin call, you know, and who couldn't see this coming 4 years ago when people, you know, are paying $500,000 in San Diego for a crack house that needs a new kitchen and roof and everything else, you know, when, you know, 3 years before it was worth $120,000. And now we need to rush to throw them $700 billion to save their butts. This is outrageous. It's all they're doing is asking themselves to be saved. They ain't saving us. They're throwing us to the wolves and saving themselves.
You know, Dan, you and I agree. You began your call saying this is a margin call. You know, if you look at the financial meltdown we had in the mid-'80s, and you look at the one we're in now, I know now we're talking about the Great Depression and presidential campaigns are being halted as someone runs off to Washington to meet in the midnight hour. The fact of the matter is, the 80s were just as bad as this is. I mean, in some cases, we may not be in as bad a financial shape this time as we were in the 80s. The difference is the accounting rules. The accounting rules are different now. And with a swipe of one pen, that mighty sword, you could alleviate this. At least the taxpayer debt you could alleviate by rewriting the accounting rules. That's all you would have to do. I mean, look at the 80s and what happened there. Why is this any different? It's not, except they're changing the way that they account for. Well, I'll give you an example. You know, a bank generally loans out what? 10 times its capital. They take a big hit. That means that 10 times their outgo can't be done. And what happens? They're insolvent. Rewrite the accounting rules. Rewrite, you know, what are on the books. That's what they did in the 80s. Why all of a sudden now is it so necessary to go to the American people and say, we need $700 billion or boy, will you be sorry. That's essentially what they're doing. They're coming to you like a 12-year-old saying, please, please, please loan me some lunch money because if I don't have any more, my mom's going to kill me. And if you don't, I'm beating you up at recess tomorrow. Well, what is that? You know, most of us were born at night, but not last night. You know, they can fix this within the system. If I hear one more person say, well, Rick, it's for our own good. No, it's not. Play it out to the illogical end. It's not for our own good. It's for the good of Wall Street. It is Wall Street welfare. That's what this is, pure and simple, Wall Street welfare. And I've got one message. The American people stood up in mass, and that's the key, standing up in mass. If you stand up to protest taxes one at a time, they just pick you off like, you know, ducks out of a blind. No, in mass, the people stood up and said, no amnesty. Well, I got news for you. No amnesty for Wall Street. No amnesty for Wall Street. Now, can you get on that train? No amnesty for illegals. No amnesty for Wall Street. That should be the watchword. That should be the rallying point. That should be what we need to send to Washington. No amnesty for illegals. No amnesty for Wall Street. Fix it. Love the American taxpayer. Yeah, let's do this again real soon. This is Rick Roberts, setting in for Michael Savage. Michael, thank you for the opportunity. Always a pleasure to sit behind the mic in the Savage Nation. Going to be giving away copies of Michael's fifth book. Of course, he's had four bestsellers. This is destined to be the fifth bestseller, Psychological Nudity, a collection of 75 stories. Some you've heard, some you've not heard, some you got part of. We're going to be giving copies away right here on the show. Psychological Nudity. Also, I need you to go to michaelsavage.com. Michaelsavage.com. A lot of what Michael does every single day is on there. They fully vet the issues of the day, and you will find all the information you won't get in the lamestream media, that's for sure, the alphabet channels. You need to go to michaelsavage.com and stick around. Maybe we can put a copy of Psychological Nudity in your hands. Again, Rick Roberts setting in for Michael Savage on The Savage Nation.
Savage.
This is Rick Roberts, setting in for Michael Savage. Michael, thank you once again for the opportunity, and this is The Savage Nation. I've got copies of Michael's fifth book, Psychological Nudity. I need to start getting those out to you. Michael says I'm driving him to the poorhouse by giving away so many books. That's okay, as long as you have permission, right? As long as Michael gives his okay, gives his blessing, then we'll give as many of these things away every day as we possibly can. This is destined to be Michael's fifth bestseller, Psychological Nudity, a collection of 75 stories. Some of these stories you've heard, some of you have not. As a matter of fact, let's do this right now. Steve in Middletown, Connecticut. Steve, what is your favorite story that you're waiting to read in Psychological Nudity?
Is Tippy the dog. when he doesn't let the people out of Savage's house.
That's right.
We'd like to do that with our congressmen. Make them stay and straighten out the things in this country and have the dog waiting for them when they try to leave to bite them on the rear end, you know?
Perfect. Put a tippy at each exit and keep them there until they figure it out. I love it, Steve. I've got a copy of Psychological Nudity for you. Stay right where you are. Don't go anywhere. I want to make sure we get one of those in your hand, courtesy of Michael himself. Rachel, Tucson, Arizona. Rachel, thanks for waiting. You're on the Savage Nation. Hi, Rachel.
Hi. I just wanted to speak briefly about how disappointed I am in Barack's response to McCain wanting to suspend his campaigning for a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
While we deal with the economic crisis, his flippant comment about multitasking really just speaks to his just inability to provide us with some good leadership. He is not recognizing what a crisis this could be for our society, and he wants to one-up everybody. But I'm really disappointed in his response, and I think that the campaigning should be suspended, and they should get together and address and provide some really good leadership.
You know, what better way to go with, 40 days, I believe, Rachel, until the election? What better way to prove to the American people, yes, we're not forgetting about you, we're going to stop for a week or so, and in a bipartisan effort, show you that we're actually working on behalf of the American people by trying to work this mess out. But that's not what's going to happen. Now, why did McCain do what he did? Well, I think that's McCain's character. I think that's what he does. He's always worked with Democrats before. Maybe this is a way he thinks politically he can demonstrate that again. But I tell you, I agree with you in Obama's response. It was flippant. It was insincere. It was arrogant. Narcissistic to some degree, and once again, he has shown he's a total neophyte in the world of politics. 143 days experience on the Hill. All he's concerned about is the win. Well, you know what? I'm concerned about a few more things, like why in the world are you asking for amnesty for Wall Street 40 days before an election? And you're getting a resounding not just no, but hell no from the American people. This is Rick Roberts, setting in for Michael Savage on The Savage Nation.
Savage.
It should be embarrassing politically and substantively in any other way. I mean, people in this country understand pay for performance for success. That's the American dream. No one understands pay for failure. And no one understands...
So, Mr. Secretary, what are we going to do?
So in terms of what we're going to do, as I have said, I believe we need to figure out some way to incorporate this in this plan, but it has to be a way to incorporate it so the plan can still be effective.
Well, there you go. This is just, do you feel like you're sitting down with your 8-year-old children trying to explain how the world turns? I love this. In the wake of President George W. Bush's televised address, anticipated coming up here before too long, he'll be addressing the nation to support his administration's $700 billion taxpayer bailout of Wall Street. U.S. Representative Thaddeus McCotter, a Republican out of Michigan, chairman of the Republican House Policy Committee, and the first Republican, by the way, to publicly oppose the Paulson bailout plan, asked the following question. Not very long, won't take long to listen to. Who's giving the Republican response? I love that. Absolutely love it. because everything is upside down. Everything's on its head. This is Rick Roberts sitting in for Michael Savage, and you're on the Savage Nation. Michael, thank you for the opportunity once again. It's always a pleasure to be in for Michael from time to time. Michael's fifth book, destined to be a bestseller, Psychological Nudity. Going to make sure we put that in your hand coming up in just a little bit. Also, want you to go to michaelsavage.com. You got to go there at some point today. Make some time to go to michaelsavage.com. It'll be well worth your time. North Carolina, George. George, thanks for waiting. You're on the Savage Nation. Hi.
Yes, thanks for taking my call, Rick. I'm having deja vu when you mentioned Bonnie Frank, because years ago I held a press conference. I'm a pastor, a black minister, and I held a press conference on the steps of the D.C. Supreme Court there, the district court, when Bonnie Frank was charged with allowing a prostitution ring to operate in his house and also down fixing tickets.
Right.
At the same time, Marion Barry was up for charges on smoking crack cocaine. And I was not defending Mayor Barry, but I said equal punishment should be administered to both of them. Bonnie Frank got a slap on the wrist. Now the situation has even increased in stature because Bonnie Frank is in charge of the banking committee, which was Fannie Mae's piggy bank. Obama was picking up money. He's only been in the Senate 140-something days, and he's already collected the second largest amount of money from the Fannie Mae piggy bank. Also, his financial advisor, Franklin Raines, is on Obama's staff, who collected over $90 million in 6 years.
Yep.
And had to resign in disgrace.
Yeah, we touched on that briefly. You know, this thing has so many tentacles and goes so far and so wide. But we did touch on that briefly yesterday. But let me go back to your first comment about Barney Frank. You're right. Believe it or not, in this upside down, convoluted, abstract world of politics inside the Beltway, the guy that was the major stumbling block once, at least before 2003, in 2003, then again 2005, the guy that could have put the brakes on this, or at least stood back and let everybody else do the right thing, and now the problems come to fruition, this guy gets a pass. Why should he get a pass, himself and Schumer and the rest, when they consistently said, no, we don't need an oversight committee for Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac? No, they're doing just fine. No, the sky is falling mentality doesn't work here. They're going to be fine. I mean, there was red flag after red flag after red flag, and every step of the way, these guys tried to put a stick in the spokes of the wheel. Well, look what happened. If the CEOs are going down, and they well should, why shouldn't the people that help bring this to fruition inside the Beltway, why shouldn't they go down?
Bonnie Frank needs to go down also.
Yeah, amen to that, George. I appreciate the call very much. Chicago, Justin, thanks for waiting. You're on the Savage Nation.
Hi, first-time caller. I'm 20 years old. I'm just getting into the whole politics scene. I listen to Savage, at least four or five times a week. And I can't believe what's going on. I have people not being held accountable for anything that they're doing. If I'm going to do anything wrong, I know I'm going to be held accountable for. I can't believe people, get away with such things like this. I have, the military being deployed into my neighborhood for who knows what reason. Nobody's asking any questions. Nobody's saying anything about what they're going to do. You can ask for a $700 billion bailout without any real ideas. It's like me being a party planner, going up to a potential customer saying, okay, we're going to have a celebration. And that being good enough, how come nobody's asking any questions? I'm freaked out to live in this world right now. What is it coming to? What is it going to be like when my two younger siblings get out into the world? What's going to be left?
Well, not much. If the people that are discussing this right now, and that's you and that's me and millions of others, if we don't, and I know this cliche, it's not sexy, it's not quick, there's no ribbon for it. It's hard to, raise a candle in agreement. It's all of those things. But if we don't rise up in mass, there I go, I've said it again, rise up in mass, just as we did when Presidente Jorge Bush was trying to blanket this country with an amnesty bill that would have legitimized upwards of 15 to 20 million illegals. If we don't do now what we did then, this is going to be the course of business for time immemorial. It's going to be Wall Street amnesty. We need to say no amnesty to illegals, no amnesty to Wall Street. The head execs and the CEOs and the CFOs, they got to pay legitimately and literally. They got to pay. They walked away with $20 million. You got to bring it back. And there may be a little jail time. The politicians that enabled this to happen, they've got to go. Maybe not jail time, but they certainly have got to pack their bags and get outside the Beltway. Justin, that's the only way any semblance of what America once was. And if you listen to Michael, man, some of the stories about the way life used to be, the caring and the commitment that people had for this country was evident everywhere you turned. And now we're literally, Justin, and I hope people don't take this the wrong way, we're fighting a war on two fronts. We're fighting the war on terrorism in the Middle East, and we're fighting the war of socialism within the borders of this country. And the only way we win that war, Justin, is if people like yourself, you say you're 20. You got your whole life in front of you, my man, and I know that's a cliche too, but you do. You know, and this is a great, great country with lots of opportunity. But there are people right here within the borders of America that are willing to tear it down for personal and political gain. The only people that can stop that is you, because you carry in your hand the most powerful weapon that a free people can have, and that's your ability to vote, cast a vote. And you got to be knowledgeable, and you got to get other people to do it. And I know it's not a quick fix, and it's not sexy, and it's never going to make a primetime reality show. But that's the reality of it, my friend. Thanks for the call. Don't be a stranger, Brad in Sacramento. You're on the Savage Nation. How you doing, Brad?
Hey, pleasure to be here on the Michael Savage Show. Hey, real quick, what I would prefer rather than McCain and Obama grandstanding is for each of them, let me know what they would have done or what they would do if elected in with this situation. My second point, real quick, about the bailout, I have a question. I'd like to know exactly what would cause this giant collapse. And my question really is, if we had bigwigs buying and reselling bad paper, right? We had homes that were worth $500,000 last year, and now they're worth $350,000. The homes are still there. All that's lost is the profit these folks expected to make on this house of cards. And if the whole thing was nothing but paper beyond the value of what's out there, why should we prop it up so we can keep living fat? Let's take our hit now. And I'm taking mine. I live in Contra Costa County, California. Believe me, I'm taking my share of the hit. I own one of those homes.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, most people in those areas, you know, you bought a house for $500,000. The market went up. It was worth $600,000. You borrowed a little bit on it. Went up to $700,000. You went in and refinanced again. Maybe it went up to close to $1 million. And all of a sudden, there's a new boat sitting in your driveway and two new cars. Then the market falls out, and that $1 million property is worth about, you know, $500,000, $550,000. See, the problem, Brad, is the way they write the accounting rules, which is different than it was in the 1980s. You have to write up your accounting rules as to what that property value is now, not what the long-term value may be, but what it is right now. And, of course, with the market being what it is, obviously they're taking a hit. But I'm with you. Why should we artificially, key word artificially, be propping this thing up? You know, you take risks, you bundle a bunch of bad paper, you look for a buyer, they buy it, that's the risk you take. You know, I mean, I guarantee you, Brad, they wouldn't be coming to my house. Who is it? Federal government here to bail you out? Yeah, hang on a second. Let me put some clothes on. I'll be right there. Did you bring the checkbook? Oh, yeah, Mr. Roberts got the checkbook with us right here. Do you see what I'm saying? This is insane. This is rewarding greed, rewarding bad behavior, rewarding, in some cases, I'm sure, criminal behavior. You don't do it. You absolutely don't do it. North Carolina, Mike, thanks for waiting. You're on the Savage Nation.
Good to talk to you. Everything you're saying is just right on point. The whole thing I was going to say is, you know, we kind of got to screw this bailout. It's Wall Street and then it's Main Street. The people who knew they were taking out these loans shouldn't have been taking out these loans. And Wall Street should not profit whatsoever. And we need to call our congressmen, our senators, everybody, and let them know we're not going to do it, just like you were talking about the amnesty. I remember when I lost my job in 2001 after 9/11. Nobody came to bail me out. I did everything to scrape and keep my house, and I still have it to this day. But I had to sacrifice, and I lost a lot of things then. And there's no reason that we should be bailing out anybody now.
Well, Mike, if you would, if it would not be an inconvenience, if you could sit down and handwrite out a little pamphlet of your experience after you lost your job after 9/11, I would be more than happy to hand carry it to those guys on Wall Street and say, look, Mike in North Carolina can do it. you guys can do it. You can scrape, you can sacrifice. Some of your businesses will fall by the wayside, and that's probably as it should be. Others will come back, not quite as large, but certainly more cognizant of what they're doing with investors' money. And that's the way it works, Mike, because of you epitomize the spirit, the backbone, and the integrity of what built this country. Wall Street does not. I'll say that again. Your experience, Mike, and the way that you handled your misfortune, your bad break, call it what you will, fill in the blank, that is the spirit, the backbone, and the integrity, and the character that built this great country. Wall Street doesn't mirror any of that. None of that. Everything with Wall Street is paper. It's pushing paper, and it's all numbers. It's just a matter of how many zeros are behind the fixed numbers. That's all. And that's exactly what's going on. Thank you for the call. Please don't be a stranger. Salt Lake City, Kevin. Kevin, listen, I think you need a copy of Psychological Nudity. What's your favorite story that you're waiting to see in Michael Savage's fifth book?
Love by the Sewer Plant.
I laugh every time somebody says that, but it's a great, great story. Kevin, I'm telling you this. You know Michael's got four bestsellers. You know that, right?
I do. I have them.
You got them all. Good, because we're gonna complete your collection at least as of today, because I'm hoping Michael comes out with more books. He's very prolific, and I know he will. This is destined to be his fifth bestseller, Psychological Nudity. It's a collection of 75 stories. Many of these stories you've heard. Some you've only heard portions of. Some you've not heard at all. But it's a great read, Kevin. I want you to stand by for just a second because I want to put a copy of Psychological Nudity in your hand. Let's go to Albany, New York. Jim. Jim, thanks for waiting. You're on the Savage Nation. How you doing, Jim?
Good. How you doing?
Doing good.
You know, I'm a little fed up with everybody blaming Wall Street and absolutely no blame going to Main Street, because I think there's a whole bunch of people who live on Main Street who had no right freaking applying for mortgages and buying houses that they knew damn well were out of their price range, but they did it anyway.
Agreed.
Wall Street was filling a need.
Agreed. Well, no, wait a minute. I won't go that far. I agreed with you to a point. I mean, there were a lot of Democrats that got on the backs of these organizations saying, you're redlining. As a matter of fact, I'm going to address that in just a second, because Jim brings up a good point. There were a lot of people, and many people, by the way, that aren't even supposed to be in the country, making application for and receiving loans to own homes. You know, it's one of those things where, yes, there are certain people on Main Street that will take advantage of every opportunity that's thrown before them, whether it's right or not. It's like my grandfather used to say. I was raised by my grandfather. God rest his soul. You know, just because you can do something doesn't mean you should do something, and being right is not always enough. Never understood any of that until I got older. But, Jim, yeah, they fulfilled the need. It was like a drug addict and the drug dealer in many cases. Yeah, I'll give you a little taste. Oh, you like that, don't you? Well, come on back. Here's another little taste. Ooh, that's good. Yeah, come to Papa. Well, now, this one's going to cost you a little bit. Well, not a whole lot. Yeah, that's good. That's good. Oh, ooh, you're back. You want a little more? Okay, that's going to cost you just a little bit more than it did the first time. Yeah, the drug dealer and drug addict relationship. That's basically what we were looking at on Wall Street. Oh, it's still there, probably in literal terms and figurative terms as well. This is Rick Roberts setting in for Michael Savage. You're on the Savage Nation. Savage. This is Rick Roberts setting in for Michael Savage. And Michael, thank you once again very much for the opportunity. It's always a pleasure and a privilege to be sitting behind the mic on the Savage Nation. Again, Psychological Nudity, Michael's fifth book, destined to be his fifth bestseller. Also, I want you to go to michaelsavage.com. It takes some time. Doesn't take very long. And trust me, it is well worth your time. michaelsavage.com. And I'm going to try to give away another book here very quickly if I can. San Francisco, Andrew, thanks for waiting. You're on the Savage Nation. How you doing, Andrew?
Hey, we've all heard the expression, don't let your mouth write a check that your butt can't cash. Well, don't let your government write a check that your economy can't cash. This is an attempt to inflate our currency, and I don't like it, and I'm scared. Generally, I mean, the inflation's already out of control. We can't handle this.
Well, that's right, Andrew. I mean, they're going to get from you, the taxpayer, what they can wring out of you. after, you know, you're already overtaxed to begin with. We've got the second highest business tax on planet Earth. They're going to try and wring you out a little more. And if that's not enough, then they'll start printing money, which is runaway inflation, just as you said.
Yeah, I'm in commissionable sales, and I get taxed worse than anybody. I know firsthand. It's insane.
It is insane. It is insane. I wanted to address a caller a little previous to taking Andrew's call about people getting mortgages that shouldn't get them. I don't have time to get into that right now, but it's a very integral part of this economic meltdown. So are the sanctuary cities and those politicians that turn a blind eye to all the carrots being dangled in front of the illegals running across the border. But we'll talk about that another time. Tanya in Wisconsin. Tanya, thank you for waiting. You're on the Savage Nation. Hi, Tanya.
Hello, Mr. Roberts, longtime listener to the Savage Nation.
Great. Good to have you.
I am calling to make a little reference to the past here about Michael Savage, how he would say, sheeple, wake up. There's an old saying, sheep get led to slaughter, and we are getting led to slaughter. We need to wake up. We're headed down the socialist path right now, and it's going to head us right into communism if we don't wake up. I mean, somebody needs to give us a timeline, maybe give us an outline of how things should be done and what we should do, because calling the congressmen and the senators isn't working.
Well, Tanya, it does work, but it doesn't work very quickly. It worked when President Bush tried to legitimize upwards of 15 million illegals, 15 to 20 by, you know, it depends on who you talk to. I mean, he was set. You remember the George W. Bush Unplugged tour, where he went to every village, every burg, every township, every city, by the same mantra: illegals are here doing the jobs Americans won't do, which is patently false, except in those regions where illegal immigrants are basically invited to come, where those jobs are being done generally by illegals because of a sanctuary city status or what have you. In the rest of the country, guess what? Legal citizens are doing those jobs. Yes, they are. But you remember that. That was all a setup for the giant amnesty plan. And what did the American people do? I mean, literally, it was like ringing the bell for the militia. Within a week, I mean, I've been in talk radio for a while. Within a week, I saw the American people rise up. I mean, everybody was on a computer. Everybody was on the phone. Everybody was, putting stamps on snail mail. It was incredible. I've never seen people call to action like that. Well, this is just as important, if not more important. And I know, again, at the risk of being redundant, it's not sexy, it's not cute, it's not the stuff of reality television. Some of people find it very boring, very mundane, but it's the only way to take your country back, because right now it's not yours. You know, Michael made a good comment earlier talking about people afraid of the sovereignty of this country, and Michael said there is no sovereignty of this country. And, you know, he's right in a lot of ways. You got to take a look at this. Go to michaelsavage.com. Psychological Nudity is the book. This is Rick Roberts setting in for Michael Savage on The Savage Nation. Thank you, Michael. Savage.